Mr. Atkins, Reel 1. Could we start by your telling me where you were born, please?
Yes, I was born in Halifax, Nova Scotia, Canada, on the 7th of November, 1919.
How did you come to be born in Canada?
That was where my mother lived, and my father, my real father, who I never ever knew. Does that sort of give you the answer to the question, right? Can elaborate if you want me to. My stepfather was served in the Royal Navy in the First World War. At the conclusion of the First World War, he was transferred to the Canadian Navy and in about the year 1919-1920, where he then met my mother, and they subsequently married in May 1922, and they brought me to England. That's how I come to be here in England.
Were you educated in England or in Canada?
I was educated all my life in England, here in Aldershot.
So you were brought up in Aldershot?
Yes, all my life, other than the first two or three years of my infant life.
How old were you when you left school?
14 years of age.
And what did you do then?
I first started as a boy milkman with a firm called P. Polsoms in Aldershot. I looked for something a little better and went into private service at a public school in Godalming called Charterhouse, where I stayed for approximately just over a year. And then in those pre-war days, circumstances at home were difficult and they wanted more money. So back home I went, or came, to once again take up a job as a milk boy, subsequently a butcher boy.
How did you come to be in the army then?
Well, living in Aldershot, as you know, there is a strong presence of the army always in one's mind. And as a boy, I remember one heard very often the beat of bands and drums marching through Aldershot, troops marching, singing on their way to periodical manoeuvres and all that sort of thing. The Aldershot tattoo was in its heyday in those days, and all those sort of things gave me an interest in the army.
What were relations like between the army and the civilians in Aldershot in the later part of the 30s?
Oh, much the same as it is today, I think. I don't think it's changed dramatically at all. If anything, probably better than it was, than it is now. There was the number of troops in Aldershot was significantly greater then. It was a very large garrison town, and I don't recall, mind you, being young, I probably wasn't aware of all the things that went on, but basically speaking, I think the relationship between the civilians and the army at that time was very, very good. I think the only probably instances of concern would have been the Friday, Saturday nights visits to the pubs, of which there were many in Aldershot in that time.
What type of trouble might occur?
Well, the usual thing that happens after soldiers have had one or two pints more than they ought to have done, and a few fights would break out here and there amongst units. But I'm not aware of any great disturbances, to my knowledge, anyway.
Would you get fights between the soldiers and the civilians?
I can't recall any, quite honestly, but I, being young at that time, as you recall, that probably wouldn't have entered my mind. But what I can remember very distinctly was, particularly on weekends, the town of Aldershot... There could be seen many military policemen in different positions in the town, because of the number of troops that used to go in to visit the pubs and enjoy themselves and whatever the results might be after that.
Which particular regiments were rivals of each other who used to attract the fights?
That would be difficult to say in particular, but if I give you... there was a very, very strong Scottish regiment's influence in Aldershot. There was the normal infantry of the line regiments in another sector of Aldershot, and in another sector there was the cavalry units. So there was bound to be interregimental rivalry of some description or other amongst the people, amongst the soldiers themselves.
Did you get brothels in Aldershot at that time?
I was too young to know, quite honestly. But I, there was a certain area in Aldershot, and perhaps I'd ought to be careful what I say here, so that I don't defame any one particular area of Aldershot. But I believe one area that has now ceased to exist where people live, community, has been pulled down, although the name of the street still is there, Edward Street, in and around that area. But I know of no particular brothels as such.
But what would you get in Edward Street?
Local individual clients.
On the street?
Probably visiting the pubs and picking up their trade from the pubs. That would be the, I would think that would be the main centres where recruiting of that nature would be done.
How did the citizenry regard that? In a philosophical way or with outrage?
The philosophical way in Aldershot.
So let's pick up your own story where I interrupted you, please, with you joining up. Can you tell me how you went about it?
Yes, I'll tell you that kind of quite. I was always, first of all, I wanted to join the Navy. And I was so keen on becoming a sailor that I hopped on an old bicycle. And I cycled all the way from Aldershot right the way down to Portsmouth on this old bicycle. No brakes on it, no mudguards or anything like that. And if you ask me how I stopped the bike, one used to get off and put the foot up against the tyre and slow it down. So that had an effect on the footwear. However, I eventually arrived at the recruiting office in Portsmouth. Sadly, they wouldn't accept me because they told me my eyesight wasn't good enough. So in my determination to enlist, I came back and went to the recruiting office in Aldershot. And at that time, I was between the ages of 16 and 18. So on applying to the Army recruiting office, they told me to go away and come back when I was 18. I was too old for boy service, too young for man service. So that put the lid on that at that moment. Then I became aware of the Territorial Army. And so I went over to Farnham, just outside Aldershot, town of Farnham, where there was a local TA unit, the Queen's Royal Regiment. And I went in and asked them, could I join the Territorial Army? And the man, the company sergeant major there, said, right, what's your name, how old are you, etc., etc. And there I was, a member of the Territorial Army to start with. That would be in 1936. At about that same time, I chose to take up this employment at Charterhouse in Godalming. And after about a year, towards the end of 1936, early 1937, I became a little disillusioned, as youngsters will, with their employment. And I decided I'd have a bash at joining the regular army. So I went up to Stoughton Barracks in Guildford on April the 1st, 1937, and was interviewed and joined the army there at Guildford, Stourton Barracks, Guildford, in April 1st, 1937.
Without any problem?
No problem at all. In point of fact, to get into the regular army in those days was a very much more simple effort. As far as I'm concerned, if you tried to join the army under those circumstances today, you wouldn't stand an earthly in getting in.
Why not?
For instance, education. The only education test that I was given to get into the army was the lance corporal in the orderly room saying, "Can you read?" "Yes." Handing me a book, "Read that paragraph." And I just read the paragraph. "Okay, that's all right. How old are you?" Told him how old I thought I was, you see, to get into the army. And they said, "Okay, medical." The medical was a little stiffer. We went over and there was a medical officer. There was five or six of us. And we went into the reception room. The medical orderly said, "Right, strip off." And finally, there were six or seven of us standing in our birthday suits. No privacy in any way, shape or form. The medical officer comes out, walks down the front rank, looks at each one of us. As he goes round to the rear of the rank, he told us all to bend over and looked us at whatever he was going to do, and got to the end of the rank, said, "Okay, all right." And that was that.
Why do you think he asked you to bend over?
Well, I don't know. with all my experience in the army, one has very, very suspicious ideas. But however, he was accompanied by other persons, so it was all right. At least I hope so.
How much training had you had in the TA? Did you feel that you were already a soldier?
None. Very, very little training in the TA at that time. One used to go to the drill hall once a week. And you did an evening's instruction of some sort under a non-commissioned officer of some description, some rank or other, who would try and teach you the intricacies of the Lewis gun or the rifle, and a little bit of drill. So you can appreciate that only once a week, say 2 hours instruction at the very most, it would have taken a long, long time to become very efficient. I do remember going on a fortnight's camp with the Territorial Army to a place called Dibgate Camp in Folkestone. And my recollections of that is that I never had a clue or the foggiest idea of what I supposed to do or what I should do. All I can remember doing was somebody said, "Fall in here in fours, quick march," and away we went from here there. And the outstanding memory of that was just remembering seeing some officer riding around on a big white horse, giving orders and shouting whatever it was. But to me, it meant precious little at that time.
You said that you'd joined the army really because of, obviously, your career reasons. But was there any patriotism at all involved?
Oh, yes, I think so. From my personal point of view, I can't understand where it came from, but there was always this sort of build-up within me that that's what I wanted to be. Having failed for the Navy, the Army was definitely my next objective. And it sort of grew into me as a youngster, and that was what I was determined to do. It is in parallel with a story that I wrote about my early years, while it has no army connection, was one of deprivation, being brought up in a rather large family, very badly off financially, etc., etc., in those days. And I was the eldest of seven children, and I bore the brunt of many of the chores that had to be done in the home. And as time went on, I began to feel that that also encouraged me tremendously to make a way for myself in life.
But you said patriotism came into it. Where did your loyalty lie? Was it towards the king, or towards Britain, or to the regiment, or what were you? What did you feel you were loyal
well,
to?
Well, I have memories as a child at school. For instance, we had a thing called Empire Day, which was very much ingrained into the children of those days of what the British Empire meant. Now, I was a very young child at that time, 10, 11, perhaps a little bit younger, about that age anyway. So that sort of was the seed, I think, of patriotism coming into me in the very first instance. And then I think because I lived amongst troops in this town of Aldershot, that in itself sort of was a spur. I remember having great respect for the royalty, and still have, of course. King George V was on the throne, and Queen Mary at that time that I'm talking about. We never saw very much of them. They were very, very... What would one call that? They didn't appear in public and was quite so accessible as the modern day royalty is seen. So therefore, they were very mystic figures to us. So they meant that they really did mean something. So yes, the patriotism was there. The king and queen meant a lot to me as a youngster. And still do, of course, as far as royalty is concerned.
You said about feeling deprived in your youth. Did you blame anybody or anything for that?
This is a very delicate question, but I will answer it because for many years I ran away from it. But you remember I mentioned that I was born in Canada and I never knew my real father. That was because I was illegitimate. Not knowing my real father, and my stepfather, who had been a Royal Navy man and was brought up in, I suppose, the old, very old naval traditions where flogging was heard of, even at that stage of their service life. He believed in the administration of the strap for the least and most minor misdemeanor in behavior, whatever. And I, being the eldest boy in the family, seemed to receive the wrath of him more than I thought was justified. And in my life story, I have put that. He was a hard-working man, but he suffered certain disabilities, which meant that he was stood off from work on many occasions. And when that happened, unemployment benefit was not immediately available, which meant that one had to go to what we called a relieving officer at that time, and he would listen to the circumstances of your family and eventually issue your parents with a note for about 10 shillings to go and get a week's groceries, which you had to go to a particular shop nominated by the relieving people, and buy 10 shillings worth of groceries, which was to last a family like ourselves, what, a week before you could get any more. So the combination of my father being rather brutal in the application of the strap and that sort of thing, very little money in the house, rather a large family. Does that answer the question?
Yes. So how did you find it in the army once you became a regular from the point of view of living standards and
the amount of
food you got and
so on? It was vastly different. I'd like to start that off by saying that you remember I said I went to Charterhouse in Godalming, and I went to the oldest house in that complex at the time called Girdlestonites.
Girdleston Heights.
Girdleston Heights. There was the name of the house. There was 11 houses in that complex of Charterhouse at that time. And this house, where a certain number of the boys lived as boarders, and I went there as a houseboy. And I'd never seen food in my life like it. Never. For me to get up and have a breakfast of cornflakes and pure milk and butter, bread liberally laced with real butter, and all the food that went with that type of thing was out of this world to me. So from there, the next step, as you asked me about the army food, to me it was great. Absolutely. There was always plenty of it, but very basic and nothing like what you see now in the army. But in those days, it was wholesome and it was good and you never felt hungry.
So as a houseboy in Charterhouse, you got that kind of food yourself, did you? Or you were watching other people getting it?
No, we got it as well because we were houseboys and we were what you call lived in. On a lived-in basis, so you had the same food coming up as the boys ate themselves. And it was magnificent food.
So did you put on weight once you got into the army?
No, I think the army being keeping us very physically occupied, what weight you might have been put on was burnt off by all the physical exercise that we did anyway.
How were you treated on the recruits training?
Oh, very. Because I wanted to be a soldier, because I really had my heart set in it, nothing that happened to me as a recruit really offended me in any way. My heart and soul was there to do my best. I got obviously choked off like any person does from time to time, day to day, depending on the mood of the platoon sergeant. And but I have absolutely no grumbles whatsoever at the treatment that we used to receive. You sometimes read these days, don't you, of bullying going on. I can't remember anything that ever resembled bullying. It was strict, very strict. But if you did as you were told and you did your best, no harm could come to you.
Did that apply to your comrades who were in the recruits?
Oh, yes. I think there was about 30 of us in this one particular platoon. I'll give you the name of the platoon. It was called Peninsula Platoon. And my platoon sergeant was Sergeant Jack Dennis. And his assistant was a Corporal Cockerell. Sergeant Dennis was a very, very good and strict instructor, but he had a temper. And he was nicknamed Mad Jack. But having said that, I don't think anybody harboured any grudges towards him in any way, not in recruit training.
Do you think the temper was real or put on?
Oh, I think it was probably put on for our benefit, for the recruits to, you know. His bark was certainly worse than his bite, that's for sure.
Now, you went out to Palestine in 39. Can you tell me how that came about?
Yes. At that particular time, as now, that country, Palestine, has been going through turmoil because of the disagreements, put it simply, disagreements between the Jews and the Arabs. The Arabs say it's their land, the Jews were saying it's theirs. But at that particular time, the Jews, because of the upheaval going on in Europe in those early days and the advent of Hitler and Mussolini, a lot of the Jews saw salvation in trying to evacuate themselves to Palestine. And the Arabs were rather worried because they were taking over the country. And Britain at that time was the administrator as a... What's the name
mandate.
Of that? Mandate. As a mandate. They tried to sort of hold the two sides apart, but it became more and more difficult. And in the long run, troops were sent there to try and keep the peace.
How did you get out there?
Well, we sailed on a ship called the H.T. Navassa, a troop ship. And we sailed from Southampton precisely on the January the 1st, 1939. And it took us something like 10 days, stopping at Gibraltar en route, I think only Gibraltar. And we docked at Haifa in Palestine about the middle of January and proceeded to a little place called Tulkarm.
What was there?
Precious little. There was a girls' school there called the Gadori School, which was been taken over by the army for accommodation, and that accommodated one company and several other buildings which sort of accommodated the headquarters company. The buildings were we had some huts also which can't think of the word for it, which helped to give us more accommodation. Another company was situated about a mile away in another school, and then the rest of the battalion was anything up to 10 miles away in different outposts.